Good morning. This is KBBI, AM 890, Homer. And you are tuned to the coffee table. I'm your host, Kathleen Gustafson. And our guest in the studio this morning, Representative Paul Seaton from District 31, right here in Homer. Good morning.
Good morning, Kathleen.
And so what is your constituency? Let's get basic here.
The Lower Kenai Peninsula, not including the south side of the bay, going up to basically Soldotna and Kenai.
You have a brief break. Welcome home to Homer for just a couple of weeks.
Well, it's interesting. We're actually still in special session. But we are having technical sessions because the only thing that is on the call from the governor is the oil and gas tax credit business. And we worked on that for 30 days with the Senate, and there was just no movement between the two bodies. So,
well, can you line it out for us? What are the two ways of looking at this? What are the...
Right. The House version, it was a House bill, House Bill 111. It raised some money for the state by changing the tax rate, actually lowering the tax rate from 35% to 25%.
And how does that raise money?
It raises money because there's this big exemption that was in there so that they don't actually have to pay their profits tax. And what we were doing is saying, hey, 25% profits tax is what's going to be paid below $100. And you actually have to pay that instead of having this per barrel credit that comes in and dilutes the amount that the oil companies pay down to like 13%. And so we actually raised about $150 million a year at these intermediate prices between $50 and $80 a barrel. And so that was one portion. And the other portion was the changing the cashable credits. Now, I have to explain to everybody that cashable credits aren't just cashable credits. Those credits for net operating losses were established back when we said, okay, if you have a net operating loss, in other words, you spend more money in a year than you made on your investment in oil and gas on the North Slope, you could actually write those off, carry them forward, carry that loss forward, and write it off against your future taxes. And then the oil companies said, well, gee, we want to be, this is a small oil companies that had net operating loss. If you don't have production, anything you expend is a loss because you don't have any income to write it off against. And they said, we would like to be able to sell those to the other companies that have, that are paying taxes. And so the legislature said, okay, you can do that. You can sell your net operating loss to another company, and then we'll go ahead and buy those credits that are converted at 35%. So that's a little confusing there.
It is. I was going to ask you if you can break that down a little further.
Okay, so what it is you have a net operating loss, and that gets converted at the statutory tax rate of 35% to a credit. Now, you can hold that credit and apply it against your future taxes that you would owe once you come into production, or they want to do something sooner, so the legislature said, well, you can sell that to somebody else that has a tax liability, oil and gas tax liability, and then they can write that off against the taxes. That way you could cash it in. But the small oil company said, well, the big guys are going to charge us too much. And so why don't you guys, since you're paying 100% of it anyway, just directly reimburse us? So the legislature said, okay, well, we'll establish this procedure where if we have enough money, we'll go ahead and directly buy them back from you. But it's a third tier, a third way for these smaller companies to, you know, get reimbursement for 35% of their expenditures, and we're not required to do that. And everybody's considered that, oh, they're cashable credits, and so now people think, oh, the state is required to do that. Well, in the budget this year, we passed some intent language that says, after the 1st of January, do not ever expect us to pay any cashable credits for anything earned after the 1st of January, to get rid of a kind of a moral obligation that the state had because there was this kind of understanding
because
that we would buy it.
Because they made agreements in the past.
They had made investments on the understanding, no firm commitment that we would buy them back. But so anyway, that was taken care of in the budget. And now what's happening is we're in the question of, should we eliminate these cashable credits in a different way? And so that's the problem. And the House has come forward and said, we want to get some tax reform, so there's actually taxes to pay some of those credits. The Senate disagreed. The Senate actually loses us revenue over the next 10 years from their version of House Bill 111. And then the other thing we said is, we want to, if you don't come into production, we want to make sure that there's a declining value, an incentive to get into production, because that's the whole idea of a production tax credit, is to get more oil into the pipeline. And the Senate disagreed with that. They wanted to carry forward the full value and write it off in the future at full value. And so the difference is, in 10 years, the liability of the state under the House plan would be $610 million, and under the Senate plan, it's $1.44 billion. So the difference between the two plans is, ours raised net revenue and decreased our future liability, and the Senate plan didn't raise any money and kept the liability just as if we were doing cashable credits.
And is the Senate there still in Juneau now working?
No.
Okay.
Everybody is. What's happened is, we're in technical sessions because we are so far apart on philosophically whether we're going to pay all these things to the net operating losses that We're not in session. Every 3 days we go in, and there's two members that go under the floor and gavel in and say, we're here, and then there's a motion to adjourn, and so we adjourn. And the reason we just haven't quit the session and sine died out is that if we weren't in special session, then the governor could call us back into special session. We would all have to fly back down to Juneau. We would all have to be there to receive the governor's new executive proclamation or a call, same thing, but those are two different terms for it. And then we'd spend all that money, and then we'd go into technical sessions because we still aren't in any way getting close, because the Senate doesn't want to agree to lower the state's liability or to raise revenue from oil companies.
And is there some sort of arbitration or mediation, or what's the way forward?
Well, we have that in a conference committee right now, and our members on the conference committee are Representative Garen Tarr, she's the chairman, and Senator Andy Jovison, and he's the co-chair of resources. So the resource co-chairs on the House side are the majority members in that, and then on the Senate side, It's Senator Geisel and Senator Stedman are the majority members there. And so there's three members on each side, but you have to work things out and find out that you're going to come to some kind of agreement. Otherwise, they're not any use expending a lot of money and per diem and having people have expensive hotels in Juneau and that kind of thing. So we just have our two members that actually live in Juneau go in every 3 days and go through a technical session.
I see. So what if you cannot come to an agreement?
Then on the 16th, the special session runs out. And then the governor could at that time call us back in for another 30-day special session, and if he just left the same thing on the call, oil and gas taxes and credits, and
there's nothing else right now that needs to be.
Well, there's nothing else on the call.
Okay,
that's the only thing on the call. If he'd leave that, it would, unless there is getting really close to an agreement, then it would be very unproductive and just expensive. But we do have a capital budget to go. But the capital budget has a number of provisions in it that the governor doesn't like and other people don't like. One of them was the addition of the full PFD. And so that's in there. That's not in the operating budget. The operating budget has $1,100,
right?
PFD. And So that's one thing. And then also the Senate had this floor amendment where they had decided to pull $50 million out of the Alaska LNG project.
Ah, that's on my list to ask about. Yeah. What can you tell us about that?
Well, it is bad timing because right now the project is open. It's called an open season where people come and do two things. One, they bid on how much gas they will buy. And we've just had the South Koreans over here expressing a lot of interest in buying gas from Alaska and also investing in the project. And so that's what we need because we don't have the money to go in and just build this project. So you need long-term investors that are willing to do that. And generally, it's the same people that want to buy gas because they want to have a full range of investment across the liquefaction plant. They want the pipeline. They want all those things. So to make sure that their investment is secure and that they will be getting the liquefied natural gas that they contract for.
I have to back up just a minute to clarify for myself. So is it all they're doing is making a commitment to buy, or are they funding anything?
Well, there's two portions of this. One is the commitment to buy, and the other is the commitment to invest. And so both of those things are on the table. There's technically something called an open season where people come in and make a firm commitment. I will buy a billion cubic feet of gas a day, but you have to know what the exact tariff is going to be before you can do that. So this is an expression of interest, which is one level less than actually saying, I will buy this for 20 years, this amount of gas per day, and if I don't buy it, I'll pay you for it anyway.
Is this what you were talking about before when we were talking about the oil and gas tax, where agreements get made that aren't written agreements but still need to be honored?
No, these are regular agreements between companies.
These are on paper.
These are all on paper and everything, but the thing is, until you know how much transmission tariff through the pipeline and the liquefaction is, you can't get someone saying, I will buy this much gas because you don't have the firm transportation price at that point in time. So it's saying, hey, how much gas do we want to buy? And we'll buy this if the cost is within this range or if it doesn't exceed a certain amount. So that's the point we're at. And the problem is if we pulled out that money from AKLNG, it's believed that a lot of that interest would go away. And so right now the governor could come back with a capital budget, but that's one issue that's in the capital budget. And so my feeling is that, and my advice is, we shouldn't take the capital budget up until September, until this open season process is done, so that we don't interfere with this application for interest and investment in AKLNG. But we'll see how that goes. I mean, my advice doesn't always carry the day.
Well, I'm going to open up the phones. The number to call is 235-7721 in the Homer area, or toll-free at 1-800-979-5224. Also, if you don't feel like hanging on the telephone, you can email your questions to info@kbbi.org. So, go ahead.
And Kathleen, I might just say there are other issues that could be taken up on the call, and one of those is...
That is my next question. What else are we talking about here?
The fiscal plan. Because, of course, the House went forward, did a lot of work, came forward with a complete fiscal plan which would sustainably fund Alaska into the future. And we passed that over to the Senate. The Senate was only interested in what was called SB 26, which was restructuring the permanent fund and reducing the dividend. And we just told everybody all along we were not interested in doing a permanent fund dividend reduction only plan. And so, because that just taxes Alaskans or has a big impact only on Alaskans, non-residents, visitors, they don't pay anything. So we said that we were willing to do that, restructure the permanent fund earnings to a percent of market value payout, an endowment method, and reduce the dividend, but only if we got the other portions, that that's oil and gas taxes and credits reform so that we got some more money out of our oil resources. And we passed a broad-based tax and we made sensible cuts. So the sensible cuts, I think we were all in there, and those are complete in the budget. And the governor did $80 million of cuts before he submitted his budget. I mean, really squeezing every agency. Those things are a package for us. We said, we will do this and we'll pass SB 26, but only on the condition that we get some broad-based revenue and some oil and gas tax and credit reform. And the Senate decided that it wouldn't do either of those. And so SB 26 isn't in play either. So that's how we've gotten to where we are. We were trying to compromise. We were not trying to hold up the show by saying we're not going to consider 26 until we get these other things. So we said we'll pass this, but it's conditioned upon oil and gas tax and credit reform and a broad-based tax so that we can secure Alaska's future, because our economy is kind of spiraling in recession here. And the only way we're going to get out of that is not just by depleting our savings, which is what's been happening for the last 5 years, but to also get new revenues.
And that's the Constitutional Budget Reserve talking about?
The Constitutional Budget Reserve is one of our savings accounts. The other kind of savings account is the earnings reserve from the permanent fund. And so that's the part of the restructuring of the permanent fund to have a payout from that permanent fund to support the services that Alaskans need, and also reducing that permanent fund dividend to a, we actually wanted $1,250 for those going forward, as and the Senate was at $1,000. We think that Alaska can work that as long as we have a broad-based revenue and we have buy-in from the people.
And are there any plans in the works to generate revenue for the state in different ways?
Well, when we passed our plan over them, we had a school tax based on income tax. We did not make that as a condition that it had to be that. We said a broad-based tax. So if the Senate wanted to do a sales tax, we found that more regressive and less helpful.
Well, also, it's one of the few ways that, like, boroughs and cities.
Yeah. A lot of conflicts with about 102 other cities and boroughs that have different kinds of sales taxes, but that's a possibility. Or there's something called an employment and self-employment tax, not just based on your personal income, but just on wages and self-employment income. And so that was a possibility too, and we forwarded to the Senate a version of that. They had, and that was on the call, Senate Bill 12. Senator Bishop had that, but it was based on a bracketed amount, a set amount that you'd pay, and it was much harder, more impactful on lower income families and upper income families. So we changed that around to a flat tax and said, here's a way you could get about a little over $300 million is by a 1.5% flat tax. Because, if you're not interested in a progressive income tax, maybe you're interested in a flat tax. We need some kind of broad-based revenue for the state. I mean, this is the only state in the nation where no citizen pays any tax to the state. I mean, there's no sales tax, there's no state property tax, and there's no state income tax. So we're the only ones that haven't figured out how to have government supply the services that are needed and have a broad-based tax to have people contribute to that. So,
and are we also the only state with a dividend, a permanent fund dividend, or something like it?
Yes, we are. So, but, and that's a philosophical term. There are some people who just want to say, well, we should just get rid of the dividend entirely. But the dividend has
never heard anybody say that.
Well, there are some people. I mean, you can go to the Senate and talk to some senators, and including the Senate president, and that will be a statement that they will make. And so we don't feel that that's a good way for the state. Our state has the greatest a balance between low and higher income people. And part of that equity comes from the permanent fund dividend. So we're not willing to just get rid of that.
So I want to open up, talk about some of the things that were accomplished during the session, because it feels like, or it sounds to me like, the oil and gas tax, that this fight is just going to continue.
Well, and that's probably true. And what we did was we hired three consultants. We didn't have our consultants had kind of faded away over time. Some had retired. So anyway, we have three new oil and gas tax consultants hired through legislative budget and audit.
And who are they?
They are, one was Rick Ruggiero. He was one of our remaining consultants, and he's been long involved in legislature. We've dealt with him for a long time. Another is Palantir Solutions, which is out of Houston, Texas. They're one of the largest software companies analyzing tax regimes all around the world. And they had also done a presentation to us a few years ago from Brooks Range Petroleum, or Pioneer. I think it was Pioneer. And anyway, on the Mustang unit on the North Slope. And it was done in a really interesting way that was much more understandable than some of the consultants. And then we have Gaffney Klein, which is consultants that we had back in 2002 and 2004. So there was a panoply of people that applied for those, and we had to go through and assess the strengths and weakness. So we have those three new consultants. And so, you know, later this fall, hopefully, we'll get together with those consultants and actually see what we need to develop as the best plan for Alaska to stay competitive, to have incentives to go to production, but also get a fair value for Alaska from our resources.
And how wonky and technical is the data they're putting out? I mean, it's got to be public information, right? How could someone like me access that information and look at it?
Well, each one of them was required as their first product. They had to have a model developed just for Alaska on oil and gas taxes throughout the state and the North Slope specifically. So we have those models. We haven't gotten them. They were just due on July 1st. So we'll look forward to seeing those and going through and then asking them the questions. Okay, if we make this change, how will that work? What will be the effect on internal rates of return for companies and net present values and all those wonky things you're talking about that we need to understand before we go forward? And also we'll be looking at you know, what's the return for Alaska for our resources and what makes us competitive or less competitive with similar regimes around the world. Oftentimes we compare ourselves with South Dakota or something like that, and we're really not comparable. When you're looking at the new technology for fracking and shale, recovery of oil, that's a whole different kind of investment. It's a short-term investment. You have wells that come forward and don't produce for very long, but produce highly when you first do them. And our whole fields up here are based on much longer term, larger fields, bigger production, many, many years longer, 20, 30 years long production.
And I'd like to hear something. I'd want to get back to oil and gas tax. And if anyone has any questions, they can call 235-7721 or 1-800-979-5224. Or you can email questions to info@kbbi.org. But I want to take a short break. And then when we come back, I'd like to talk about some of the other aspects of the budget and maybe even start with some of the ways which you might have agreed with the Senate. I mean, did that happen?
Sure. A budget contains billions of dollars, and
right.
So our disagreement was on, you know, less than $200 million.
Well, I'm going to bring up the music. You're listening to The Coffee Table on KBBI AM 890. And kbbi.org. The time is 9:27. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Representative Paul Seaton. And the time is 9:31 a.m. You are tuned to the coffee table on KBBI AM 890 Homer. If you have any questions for Representative Paul Seaton, you can call 235-7721 or email your questions to info@kbbi.org. Now, when we last, before that amazing musical interlude, we were talking a little bit about the oil and gas tax structures proposed, but I would like to take a look at the budget, at the larger budget, if you can give people an understanding of where you, where the House and the Senate are in agreement.
Sure. And just to relate, you know, I mean, we're talking about $4 billion and disagreement on several hundred million dollars.
Right.
But those are several hundred million dollars of very important things to citizens of the state.
And it's a hugely, it's a philosophical disagreement that is the position is for the Senate that oil companies won't, oil and gas companies won't go after our resources if we tax them?
Well, that seems to be, I guess you could say it that way. It's interesting when you look at profitability, because the only company that we really know about is ConocoPhillips, because they're required when they purchased the ARCO merger or the dissolution, that all became a requirement that they report Alaska separately. So we know them. And, you know, they have investments around the world. And basically in the United States, Canada, and Alaska, Alaska was the only place they made money, actually made a profit. And the others, they lost a significant amount of money, I mean, $1 billion, and they made $64 million here, something like that. It was last year. But it's the same way this year. And so our tax regime, as we look at it, is not oppressive to their bottom line. And others are the same way. So the question is, how much can we get a realistic fair value for our resources and still have people eager to invest here? And so the tax credits system was built up over time, and it came through with a one of these things that, you know, a little bit is good, so a lot's got to be better, is what happened. Originally, back in Governor Murkowski's days, we had consultants here, Pedro Van Meers, and when we first went to a profit tax regime, it was like, okay, you can do these credits, but never pay over 20% credit, because credit is these credits that you're liable for are based on the expenditures that people make, not on the profits they make. And if your tax is on profits, then these two things can get wildly out of sync, and you owe a whole lot of money because people choose to invest, but it's not making money yet, so they're not paying taxes. And that's what happened over time. It was like, oh, this 20% tax credit seemed to produce some, so, gee, 35 would be better. And then it's like, oh, we'll stack this 40% exploration credit on that. So now it's 65% tax credit based on investment. And when prices were really high and we had good margins for the profits tax, you know, it was all slid under the rug that the potential liability was huge. And so then when prices went down, all of a sudden, we're exactly in the situation where we have this high credit liability, but there aren't the profit taxes to pay for that. So that's the situation we're in. Not only is it we get less revenue from the tax system, but also we have this liability that is there. And for the big producers, the big four that are producing over 50,000 barrels a day, they don't get cashable credits. They write it off against their tax liability. Okay, so they still get the credits, but they can't turn them in for cash. They just write them off against the taxes they would pay us. But it's, you know, if the money isn't coming in or the money is going out, it's pretty much identical as far as a loss of revenue. And so that's kind of where some of these things get lost in the weeds sometimes. So sorry about going down too much of a road there.
That's all right. It's I have a lot of questions about it. I do want to talk about other things.
Right.
But I have so many questions about the oil and gas taxes.
Well, let's go back to the budget for a little bit.
So you said $4 billion?
Yeah, yeah. And 4.1. And our whole disagreements are over the cuts that were proposed to be made after the governor had reduced the budget by $83 million. And we agreed in the House that those $83 million were really significant and that they were getting at all of the inefficiencies of state government. And we got rid of 3,000 over the last several years, 3,000 job positions. Not just that people aren't in those positions, the positions are gone out of agencies. And we're at the point now where people can see that we're probably cut a little too much. I mean, we see how many trooper slots are down. You know, we see trooper posts in Wasilla or Talkeetna and Girdwood and other places having to close. We see the court system closing every Friday afternoon. May, you know, with further budget cuts, it may close for a full day. Employees having to take furlough days, in other words, leave without pay. And so we are in that situation. One of our biggest the House and the Senate, our biggest challenges between us was the Senate proposed $69 million in education cuts, K-12 education cuts. And we said that protecting our future and our investment in our kids is the most important thing we have. So that was a big bone of contention with us. And in the end, we were able to get some cuts, but not take any in education. So education was fully funded, as well as we restored the pre-K money that was for the more lawsuit. We had to do pre-K in 20 different villages, and so we restored that for 5 years, and we kept that going for another year, as well as pre-K grants and parents as teachers. Those things are just vitally important for our future, and we want to make sure that we don't cut off our nose to spite our face kind of thing. It's just a you got to conserve, but you have to conserve in ways that aren't going to cost you money in the end.
And with education, it sort of has to be year to year.
That absolutely. That's what our budget is. It's year to year to year is a budget. However, one of our big intentions was the forward fund education, because we do have a fund, a public education fund, where we can put money into that and it doesn't lapse at the end of the year. So we could forward fund education, because one of the big problems we have is the inconsistency between our budget year and the school's budget year. So they never know until after they've had to do a budget and after they've had to lay off teachers and all that, because they don't know what their amount of money is going to be. They never know what our budget's going to be and whether they get it fulfilled. So if we could get to a forward funding situation, that would really help the continuity of our schools. And we were able to do that when we had money for a few years, when I was member, and I think it was 07, 08, 09, we were able to forward fund education so that they knew they had the base amount for the next year. And we really hope to get back to that, but we can't do that without a sustainable fiscal plan that is actually going to balance our budgets over time.
And I'd like to talk a little bit about the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. The last time I was at one of your meetings at the Legislative Information Office, I heard some easily demonstrably false information being thrown around by constituents about things like criticizing our graduation rates. So I would like to hear from you. Can you talk a little bit about graduation rates on the peninsula and where they've been and where they are now?
Sure. I haven't refreshed myself on the exact numbers, but I think that the graduation rate in the last 5 years has gone up from, it was in the 70s to well in the 80s.
And what do we do to increase that? What is it that helps that?
Well, part of it is individualized instruction, and that, you know, takes money and takes reorganizing our education system, and that's ongoing. So it's not as if it's not there. Another thing that we've done, the one innovation that I think has been the most successful that we've done is the Alaska Performance Scholarship.
And what is that?
And that was under Governor Parnell, and I was the education chair at that time. And what it was coming in and saying, we are going to establish a fund and have a long-term scholarship available if kids would take higher, more rigorous courses than are required for graduation in high school, take 4 years of math, for instance, take, you know, just harder, more rigorous classes, and do their ACT tests at the end and score well on that, we would guarantee we would give them a scholarship, 4 years. And those were, I forget all the numbers of those right now, but it was enough to allow many students to be able to go to school and not come out with this huge burden of college debt, which is a real drag on the economy. When you have this huge amount of college debt, people can't start families, can't do, and, you know, even in bankruptcy, you can't discharge, you know, that personal school debt. So, anyway, that was another difference between the House and the Senate. The Senate had a bill that was over there, and they wanted to take out $58 million out of the that higher education fund to fund retirement payments. And we decided that we could take half that amount, or $29 million, and still have adequate money to ensure students in the future that scholarships would be there. So we did that in the budget as well. We went to $29 million compromise. But the 58 was just too much. It would have put the entire scholarship program at risk. And so we were unwilling to do that. So that has a big impact on students here, too, because not only do you, can you use that for just a four-year college degree, you can use it for 2 years, or you can use it for a certificate.
Right, for technical school, yep. For trade schools, all kinds of ways that a person might employ themselves. Because here's my next question is, I've met some very impressive students that come out of the school systems here. It's keeping them in the state. What can we do, or what can the legislature do to make create the conditions where educated students, high-performing students, can stay here and find jobs?
Well, I mean, we've got two aspects of that. One are we preparing people for the right jobs? The other is the Alaska Performance Scholarship could only be used in the state. And so that was one of the big things that the university identified as something that has increased their enrollment, increased the classes that are being taken. So,
there are some things we can't solve for in that. Growing up in Alaska is a relatively isolated place to grow up, and of course, kids want to look out there in the rest of the world and see what's there and get out there. But bringing people who are who the state has been working to educate, it seems like there's got to be a way to encourage people to stay, make it possible for them to afford homes.
And there is a PFD.
Oh, right.
You know, you lose that if you become a non-resident. So, the taxes that people pay here are minimal. Even if we went through with an income tax, people probably aren't going to pay anything, and it would be totally offset by the increased amount that we had in the PFD. So I don't mean to get too far into those plans, but as far as ways in which a long-term fiscal plan can be designed, it can be designed so that non-residents and visitors can help contribute to to the overall services that they're using to making an economic living. It doesn't matter whether you're a commercial fisherman from outside, if you're in the tourist industry, or if you're a North Slope worker. You know, you're making wages in Alaska based on a lot of things that are provided, airports and everything else from the state. So, you know, we want to make sure that everybody has the opportunity to contribute to what made it possible for them to make a living here. And it's, like I say, I don't want to just rag on North Slope workers. I mean, I'm in the commercial fishing industry, and a lot of people outside, and they pay income tax on
they
that money.
They just don't pay it to the state of Alaska.
That's right. They pay it to their home state. And so anyway, we would like to
I feel
to
like we
sure.
point that out every single time you're here. But it does bear repeating.
So anyway, we're not stuck on that particular tax. I mean, we set it up so that it was, hey, this is conditioned on raising about $650 million from a broad-based tax. And that's the way we left it to them. We didn't have it so that it was only the way we had designed it.
So Carl is on line one. Carl, do you read me?
I do. Thanks for the coffee table.
Go ahead, Carl.
Well, I was kind of curious to see if there's been any development with developing a school ship for Alaska. I know the economy is really tight right now, but, you know, with renewable energies, development around the world and the present presidential administration kind of putting a curb on that, China and Germany are vowing to fill that role. And with China being in the Pacific Rim and South Korea and Japan, all these countries are going 100,000% into the renewable energy fields for jobs and their future. I was wondering, our kids from Alaska, the center of the Pacific Rim here, would be great ambassadors to be able to travel to these countries and learn and share the technologies that are being curtailed in this country and develop some kind of international base here in Alaska for the joint global renewable energy projects and all the jobs and cool things that would happen for our youth to get behind the global renewable energy movement. And there's lots of things going on, especially in vessels and electric vessels, both commercial and charter and pleasure. And it seems like Alaska is not even touching clean maritime renewable energy projects. And that's a huge thing that's grown around the world. And I know, you know, we kind of focus on all the oil and the gas up here, but man, our kids would just love to sail around the Pacific Rim and the Northwest Passage over to Europe. And we've got to get a school ship to tie our youth together with the global movements that are going on. I'll get off the air and see if there's any new development there.
Thanks, Carl.
Yeah, and thanks.
So what do you say?
Thanks for the call. I mean, I think he's talking about a alternative energy ship that would travel around. I mean, ships are very expensive, as we know, with the ferry system and everything. So we've been trying to work on renewable energy mostly in, you know, on land. We had Renewable Energy Fund. We've tried upgrading to a lot of different projects. We had River Generation project that we funded. We have Kodiak Island is almost 100% hydro and wind energy. There's we've helped with wind projects up in the interior, Eva Creek, I believe it is, out of Fairbanks there. And so, anyway.
But what does the legislature do to encourage renewable energy development?
Well, I mean, we built the, we funded the transmission line from Fire Island wind farm over to connect into Anchorage, because if you didn't have that, you couldn't have had that wind farm. I mean, so some of this interconnection is really important to get. Also, you can see that in the hydroelectric projects that we've done, whether it's Bradley Lake and the extension there of increasing the water to Bradley Lake, that project that's hopefully proceeding. We also were trying to do over in, I think it was Mount Spur, we were doing the geothermal. It turned out that after they drilled a couple of wells, it was the wrong kind of rock, didn't transmit temperature very well. And so that didn't work, but we were committed to building a road and did a grant to get most of that work done to investigate geothermal. We've got the Sea Life Center over in Seward has seawater geothermal. It's using seawater to take heat out of even in the winter. And then in Juneau, there's a couple of projects down there, and now there's going to be a new one, all of downtown Juneau, and that geothermal project, working again with seawater, is going to be used to have a heat pump system and piping around the entire central district in Juneau. So you can't do everything everywhere at once, but all these experimental projects are going, and the Juneau Airport and the NOAA facility in Juneau. So anyway, those are the things that we're doing, but I'm afraid, you know, getting into another vessel is out of the realm right now with our fiscal situation.
Well, you were talking about the Alaska Marine Highway System, and it really can't pay for itself.
Well, that's right. I mean, our road system doesn't pay for itself.
I was just about to say that, but if we were expecting communities to fund the highway system that brought you back and forth, that wouldn't be sustainable either.
Right, and you know, there are some points. There's an extensive marine highway system, and I'm fully supportive of that, but when people come up and say, gee, we've got all these villages and all these towns in Western Alaska, and they all run without a ferry. They have airports, and so do some of the other places have airports, and can we exist without quite the extensive marine highway system? That's going to be a topic of conversation. You know, I've been very supportive of the marine highway system, but, you know, as I don't know what is going to be proposed, but, you know, you hear rumblings in the woods that
are
saying...
So are you talking about the next...
Yeah, in the future here.
Session, right.
You know, and we're just building two Alaska-class ferries for down in Southeastern, and we've got in the capital budget for this year, when we get around to that, hopefully it'll be in September, the final amount for the replacement of the Testamina. And so that would be fully committed. So,
and the last time we were talking on the coffee table, we had some conversations about reduction of law enforcement of troopers. Am I reading that some of those troopers some of those numbers have been reinstated?
We did put in three more troopers, and there's about...
And where are they? Based where? Three more troopers based out of where?
Oh, I think that we just gave them to the troopers, and they'll figure out the side where those are. But there are trooper slots that we have funded that are not filled right now because, you know, our problem is that we train troopers and then they go to places like Anchorage that pay higher. And so we did have a 6% increase for base trooper pay for beginning troopers, and that was really important to stop this outflow of people just after you've got them trained. And so hopefully that will help fill some of the slots, and we've got slots for VPSOs. We need to fill about 15 more VPSO funded positions, but recruiting and getting people that are willing to do that. By the way, I just wanted to make sure that everybody knew that they can go on my website and get a whole lot of publications if they're interested in any of the finances or interested in any of the presentations that were made to us on the fiscal situation and what it's looking like as far as recession and jobs and lost jobs for $100 million and of cuts and those kind of things. That's all available on my website. So.
Well, it's time for that right now. So what's the address?
It is akhouse.org /rep and then that underscore Seaton, Seaton. So if you go there, you can get all my newsletters, and you can also get all this background information on financing and the state of the economy.
And before we go tonight or today, we'll put that address up on the Facebook page that's promoting this coffee table. Also, you'll be able to hear this coffee table. We will post it on our website, kbbi.org, by tomorrow morning, and we'll make sure that that address, that link, is on the website as well.
Well, great. Thanks, and we appreciate hearing from people and hearing your ideas. So if you have any, make sure you, rep.paul.seaton at akleg.gov is our email address, and we appreciate, working with all the constituents on the Lower Peninsula here.
And when do you head back to Juneau, do you think? You don't know yet.
I don't know.
Okay, well, enjoy your time.
I'm hoping not until September.
Well, this has been the Coffee Table. Thank you, Representative Paul Seaton, for being our guest today, and good luck back in Juneau.
Well, thanks, Kathleen. I enjoy being able to talk with constituents, not only here on the Coffee Table, but in those Friday morning updates from sessions.
Well, so we sure appreciate you making yourself available to your constituents through KPBI.